Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to After Things, the show that comes after Weird Things, and we talk about things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Yep.
In the same studio as Brian, Justin Robert Young.
Hi, everybody. It's me. I'm talking to you.
So, this week, and still going on a little bit today, is the biggest vector for movie, comic, pop culture, genre news in the world.
Yep.
When everybody descends on San Diego and tells you about it, Comic-Con.
Yes. The roadmap. So movies live and die based on their Comic-Con impression. Says people that it's kind of an overblown reputation. But it certainly is a great place where you can get a trailer out and everybody talks about it.
Yeah, absolutely. It can be... You know, I don't know if it's make or break, but it certainly is a way to stoke excitement and to say, this is what the conversation's going to be about. And so you had going head-to-head Warner and essentially the Marvel franchises saying, hey, you know, we didn't really get a big, the Star Wars franchise, because we didn't get a big Marvel presence there because Marvel's kind of like mic dropped, on what they've done. But you had an amazing Star Wars presentation, and by all means, go check it out. But the short part of it is Abrams brought out the exciting new cast and the old cast of Star Wars. They did a presentation that was very well received. They have a 3.5-minute video. You should watch a behind the scenes that can maybe be a little bit of goosebumpy,
And yet spoiler free. I almost didn't want to watch it because, as we get closer, I don't want to have, significant plot points ruined for me. And yet, I think they did a good job of not focusing on the plot, but maybe, some set pieces familiar and really talking about the feeling of, I don't know. I thought it was great.
Yeah. Very well done. And then in what is going to go down in Comic-Con legendary and infamy to certain people, J.J. Abrams did a master stroke. At the end of the panel, he says, it's another big important part of the Star Wars universe. And of course, somebody shouted out BB-8, but, let's not get too excited. BB-8, he may only have like a little tiny little role. So let's not overwhelm, but he says the music. And then he promptly invited 6,000 attendees in Hall H to march half a mile away to a venue to go listen to the San Diego Philharmonic perform music from Star Wars to video of Star Wars films. Which is awesome, and it's great. And the most amazing thing you could have experience, except if you're Kevin Smith, due to do a talk in Hall H right after.
Oh no!
Yeah.
Oh no! Wait, and did I hear correctly? Because I only heard the rumor was like it was directed by or conducted by John Williams.
No. John Williams was in L.A. He did a little pre-video the beginning where he said, "Hey, I'd love to be there, but." Turns out I'm working on Star Wars 7, so enjoy these people doing this music. And they went a full Andy Kaufman, not since Kaufman brought his entire audience to Milk and Cookies has anybody been so excited to immediately leave a theater and go do something else. Just amazing. And I think what struck Ryan and I in talking about it is, this is pretty much, granted, a unique book, because not every franchise is Star Wars. In fact, there really is only one. But they are doing the best they could possibly do to hype this film, right? We have maximum hype, maximum excitement, with very little understanding of what the hell's going to happen in this movie. And yet everything we see makes us more excited about it.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what's interesting too is I think we're now seeing kind of a split in fan culture where there are sites that presume to have rundowns, all sorts of stuff, all the behind the scenes, you know, whatever you could want to know about the plot.
Yeah.
You know, there's some places that claim to have it, but that gets less coverage than it used to. That's less of a, hey, we found out this, 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 or whatever. We kind of now want to pay more attention to the narrative as done by the filmmakers because, you know, we just saw, you know, with Terminator Genesis, you know, one of the big criticisms of that movie is that there's a major, there's a twisty kind of thing that, man, if you hadn't seen it in the trailer, probably would have been kind of cool to see in the theaters and you would have been telling your friends, go see this movie. But instead you're like, yeah, that thing we know that happens. Yeah, that happens, you know, which I think I hope is, you know, the people who make the trailers and the studios get nervous. They kind of get this attitude. We got to put everything in there to get people in there. But the problem is they can often kill a twist or survive. If you went and do spoiler alert Sixth Sense and you knew all along he was a ghost, you'd be like, oh, yeah, that's a cool movie about a guy who's a ghost thing. But instead you go to be like, oh my God. No, just see it. Just see it, you know, because I want to see your reaction to that.
Well, and J.J. Abrams is kind of coming off his last movie where he swung the opposite way too far, where he was obsessive about guarding a secret that
lied to us.
That ultimately, I mean, kind of made it, you know, it was like an anticlimax when you realize that, yes, this thing everybody assumed was in the movie, despite the fact that he went out of his way to lie about it. And it's like, I was almost disappointed because I was like, oh, well, it better be something crazy or awesome. You know, if he's saying it definitely isn't this one thing, it's like, no, it's just this one thing. And he's just being stubborn because people on the internet just got something right and doesn't want to say that it's right.
Well, it's tough. I mean, and I'm sure in his mind, what he was trying to do is do a magic trick. You know, and doing a magic trick involves lying sometimes. And, you know, you can lie by inference or you can lie, you know, flatly, you know, stating something that isn't true. And he probably thought he was, or he took a gamble that it would pay off. And unfortunately, it sounds like for you guys, it didn't. I actually hadn't heard any of that. And I actually went and had the magic trick performed on me. And I liked it a lot.
But I guess that's just the thing is that Justin and I were the targets of the lie. And that's why it didn't work. I mean, in the sense that, like, if you say, oh, is X going to appear right here in the middle of the theater? No, it's not going to happen. And then you're there and, oh, yeah, happened.
Well, that's I guess weird. That's the tough thing is, you got to have the magic trick performed on you if you did not even hear the idea entertained. But the mere fact that you heard the idea entertained kind of,
you know. Well, that he addressed it. He shouldn't have addressed it, I think. I think that that was the thing is that I love Abrams to death. Love Abrams to death. And I just, having gone through another Abrams-related project where people said, no, it's not this, it's not this, and then it's it. And you're like, okay. But I think he's the perfect guy to do Star Wars. I'm excited to see a Star Wars film. And I think that he changes and adapts as he goes along.
And I think he realized that, like, for a, you know, he can keep on lock an original J.J. Abrams movie. He can keep every single detail secret and drip it out how he wants and reveal it. He ran into a problem when it came to be Star Trek, which was a very successful movie that it was a very successful sequel to. And, you know, there's a gigantic fan thirst. And I think he realized and whoever the team he's working with realized that for Star Wars, you just can't keep it in the box. You know, you have to feed the beast a little bit. And what they have chosen to feed the beast with, I think, is perfect.
Well, and so much of their strategy so far seems to be to essentially, every time when we were kids, a new Star Wars movie came out, we got excited about the new Kenner toys because a new movie meant a new slew of awesome little things. And that's kind of what you're doing. When we were at Star Wars Celebration, we took a tour. I mean, you know, here's the main bad guy's costume. But just as important is look at a flame trooper's outfit. Look at a new improved snow trooper or whatever. By keeping us focused on the periphery, on the cool gee whiz stuff, that is true sleight of hand. That is true, you know, magician play. And that, you know, we're busy watching the and getting excited about the non-story driven stuff, which is exactly how I want it, so that I could go in and be blown away by the story that I'm hearing for the first time.
And playing up some of the meta narratives like, hey, physical effects, like that is the staple of pretty much every kind of public release that they have had from the very beginning of the set photo
practical
stuff that's
effects,
come out.
Yeah.
practical effects, real film. Sets. We're shooting out in the field. I don't think it's a coincidence that John Boyega has kind of kicked off or made joking references in all the public comments he's had on panels, both at Celebration and at Comic-Con, that like, hey, thanks for shooting this in Dubai while I'm in a Stormtrooper outfit. Like, well, that was really, you know, it's like, yeah, that's a joke. It's funny. It shows, you know, a charming guy that John Boyega is. It also is, we didn't shoot this on a green screen. Yeah, don't worry. We didn't shoot it on a green screen.
Well, there is plenty of green screen in it, but they did as whenever they could build sets
in
that, which was smart. I mean, it's figuring out the right tool to do that and then working with actors, letting people act and not treating them like they're puppets on its strings. So that was an exciting sort of way to do a reveal. And then, you know, there's more stuff coming. You know, we've got D23, the big Disney Expo coming up. So we'll see what happens there. They're doing a humongous launch of all the different, you know, books and stuff like that that play into this new Star Wars version of the universe. There's going to be a major toy release. And so we're July now, August, September, October, November.
Man.
December.
This hype train's only going to go faster and faster.
Hype.
Hype train is about to go all Snowpiercer on us. We're just going to be on it forever, doing laps around the Earth.
Well, we have in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, they start shooting Rogue One.
Wow.
And we have rumors of the director of the third, episode 9.
Mm-hmm. So it's going to be Ryan Johnson for the second one?
For 8, that has been announced. Yeah. Rumors abound, and who knows? How close to or true this is at all, but it is young Colin Trevorrow, who may, by the time that this is announced, have the number 2 highest grossing film of all time in Jurassic World.
Wow.
To direct the movie. He probably has the thinnest, I mean, certainly has a thinner resume than Rian Johnson and J.J. Abrams in terms of stuff that he's done in the past. But, you know, I was thinking about it and like, hey, listen, if we get to through 7 and 8 and I'm in love with these movies, like, you know, it just a movie that kind of ties up these threads, you know, would be just amazing.
And the news this week was Han Solo, directed by
Phil Lord and Chris Miller. Who have done 21 Jump Street, the Lego movie, and of course, most notably, Clone High.
And to be written by Lawrence Kasdan and his son. So nepotism works, folks.
Oh, that's great.
So that's going to be very exciting. And that starts the inevitable, who's going to play young Han Solo? Who's going to play him?
Yeah, do you think that they'll go? I mean, is this one of those things where, I mean, because you could certainly assume that if this movie is a success, we'll get a Han Solo adventure, a young Han Solo adventure movie for as, you know, as long as the people want to make them, right? Yeah. As long as, like, this Rogue One is a one-off, right? You know, I feel like we could get a new Han Solo movie until we all die, right?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, to be honest, like, you know, X-Modem in the chat is saying, you know, Chris Pratt, guess what? He already is Han Solo in a equally rad franchise, in my book.
So what better actor to play a young Han Solo than a guy that's 2 years older than Harrison Ford was when he played Han Solo in Star Wars?
Well, I mean, I don't see, like, I don't see the point of making Chris Pratt Han Solo because he's already playing Han Solo.
Yeah.
There's a lot. I mean, listen, I mean, the reasons why you get Chris Pratt is A, Chris Pratt is like the dude right now. B, he has a history with Phil Lord and Chris Miller. And C, everyone's like, man, I don't know why, but for whatever reason, I think I'd really like to see him as a dashing space scoundrel. And it's like, yeah, I mean, but it's like, you're right. Number one, you're both right for both those reasons. A, he's too old. And B, it would make both franchises lamer, right?
I love Chris Pratt, but Chris Pratt, we're in love with him right now. But he doesn't get to be our answer to every question. You know, Indiana Jones, Chris Pratt, this Chris Pratt, like, you know, it's I mean, who can play Indiana Jones and Han Solo, right? Come on.
Yeah. Now, that's the funny thing is I would actually like to see him as Indiana Jones if they recast him
like
as Indiana Jones.
Or another character in that world. But yeah, it's that weird, you know, like when they say younger Han Solo, they mean a younger Han Solo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, because he had already been around the block, you know, he's kind of a world-weary, space, you know, competent guy who'd already built up an awful lot of trouble on his resume by the time we see him in the very first Star Wars. You know, I think seeing him become that, I think there's a lot of good opportunities.
So the other big dashing name that is constantly associated with Lord and Miller is Channing Tatum. I think we fall into the same sort of age conundrum as we would with Chris Pratt, but you know, Channing Tatum as Han Solo, that's something that I think people would get excited about.
But he would be almost 40 by the time you know, we in that again, great actor. Love Channing Tatum. If it was, you know, taking place, you know, like in Rogue One time or something like that, you know, contemporaneously with that, like, sure. But it just, you know, when you're asking a 40-year-old to ostensibly play somebody who's in their younger, early 20s, which we, you know, we don't know where this takes place. So,
yeah.
I think you've got to, you know, one of the shows that was such a great boon for casting, and you see a number of those characters, you know, those actors now playing so many roles, was Friday Night Lights. So be looking to ensemble television, be looking for those kinds of things to see where our next group of actors are. And, you know, they looks like they did, you know, they knocked it out of the park, I think, with the casting choices they made for Force Awakens. You know, if you haven't seen Attack the Block with John Boyega, please, please watch that movie. That is just an amazing, really well done, fun movie. And he's great in it.
What is Attack the Block?
Attack the Block is this alien lands in the middle of this kind of housing projecty kind of place in England, right? And so it's these chavvy lower caste poor kids dealing with an alien invasion, and they're juvenile delinquents and whatnot. But it's a really fun movie. It came in around the same time as like Neighborhood Watch, whatever came out. But Attack the Block was so much more fun.
All right. Well, then I'll try not to know anything else going into it.
I think you really.
Yeah, directed by Joel Cornish, who was, I think, produced also by Edgar Wright. But there, Joel Cornish is somebody who's worked with Edgar Wright extensively.
And it's in that tone. It's in that tone. Yeah. And Boyega is just great in it. Just great. Just there's great reveals in there and all that.
You want to talk about the Deadpool leaked footage first,
My enthusiasm for Deadpool keeps getting more and more and more, you know, increasing, because it's like, you know, Ryan Reynolds can do stuff really well. And then, you know, we got a very strange version of Deadpool in one of the Wolverine movies where, like, they sew his mouth shut and all, you're like,
yeah.
Oh. And then they've been doing, you know, have him killing Mario Lopez and doing this all other stuff and embracing that element. Deadpool's a character that's aware that he's a character in a comic book.
Yeah.
And it's the perfect timing right now where we've had so many Marvel movies and so many, we get the tropes of comic books, we get this stuff. And I think that they're doing an R-rated film that seems to be way over the top. I'm excited for Deadpool.
You know, it's a movie that has been kind of like, yeah, I thought it was just forever going to be relegated to the kind of movie gossip site, graveyard of, you know, Ryan Reynolds has wanted to get it made forever. I remember reading a script review for it, like maybe 7 years ago, something like that. It was only like 2 years or so after the Wolverine Origins movie. And you know, the opening scene was basically Deadpool talking about how crappy that movie was and how excited he was to do other stuff. We see a lot of nods in this trailer of, Ryan Reynolds, you know, becoming Deadpool or Wade becoming Deadpool, and yelling, "Hey, don't make my suit green or animated."
Or animated, right? Which is funny, like the green thing. And this is what's great about the postmodern take on, you know, of Deadpool in general, is you could have in the movie him say, "Don't make my suit green," like, "Oh, that's funny, that's like a wink." But then you step out the farther, it's like, why on earth in the context of that would he say "or animated"? But it's like, it's all the way out of the movie, and he's saying like, "I regret doing the Green Lantern." I mean, yeah. It's loved it. If they could be that smart, the whole movie, I think I'm going to deeply love it.
So the director's Tim Miller. This is his first, this will be his first feature. The writers, so they've done Zombieland, the movie, which is a great movie. Of course, they also did Zombieland, the TV show. So. one of them did G.I. Joe Retaliation, but, you know, we'll hold nobody responsible for that. You know, that was a lot. But Zombieland, I just bought Zombieland on iTunes. It's like on sale right now. Zombieland, a great movie. Funny movie, and then it punches you in the gut at the right moment. So I think the talent's there.
Certainly so. You know, it looks good. Obviously, all we've seen is leaked version of the Comic-Con trailer. Is that Colossus?
Yeah.
It's Colossus, right?
Yeah. He has another name for him.
he does. He certainly does.
Wait, Colossus, the X-Men?
Yeah, because this is Fox.
Oh, who has mutants. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, they have Fantastic Four and X-Men.
How important do you think it was as they're developing, you know, the Deadpool stuff? How closely do you think they were watching to see how well Daredevil did? Because Daredevil was essentially, even though it wasn't a movie, it was essentially the first rated R Marvel Cinematic Universe movie, right?
I think this probably had, I mean, like, this gets green lit probably more maybe on the success of, like, 21 Jump Street and the Marvel movie and, like, superhero movies in general. But to do something that's hard R has kind of made money recently. Superhero movies have made money recently. So the idea of doing a big meta superhero film, I think probably the success of those kinds of movies probably had more to do with it getting greenlit than Daredevil. Although Daredevil,
this was already well into production by the time we saw that.
Yeah. So. And Daredevil, although Daredevil certainly cements the idea that we want to experience this superhero ride in as many different ways as possible, as many different flavors of it as we can get. We want it. And, you know, Fox is hoping. And so is Ryan Reynolds, who, by the way, you know, is a guy that, you know, for him, I mean, this is really a chance for him to kind of redeem himself being the guy in a way that he was sort of tabbed to be the guy with Green Lantern. And that always felt like a bit of an ill-fitting suit. But this very much feels like what we want Ryan Reynolds to be doing. And by any accounts, considering how long he's been talking about doing a Deadpool movie, he really wants to kind of be this guy in his career. So I think it's exciting.
Yeah, no, and I think you see a lot more of, you know, what makes Ryan Reynolds a talented actor. You see a genuine charm and personality coming through in what little we've seen so far. All right, can I massively disagree with you guys in advance? Let me just say for the record that I'm going to be on a different side of this than you guys. But I just, before we started recording, saw for the first time the Comic-Con Batman versus Superman trailer. I'm 100% in. I'm 100% in. I can't wait for it. I did not hate Man of Steel like you guys. I am tired of the exact same origin story of Superman a million times. I love illegal immigrant, Jesus Superman, that like the actual Jesus is being denounced by the very people he wants to protect. I love seeing, petty, angry Batman. I love everything I'm seeing about this. I am so 100% in.
Yeah. I don't think that you're necessarily going to be on the opposite side. Andrew, what are your thoughts?
I was all for Ben Affleck's casting as Batman. Super. I was, as soon as it was announced, I thought he's a great choice for that. I'm visually, it looks amazing. It looks absolutely amazing and biased because we're friends of the DP, Larry Fong. So, you know, I think Larry looks visually, it looks great. I want this thing to be great. I mean, I've always wanted a Batman versus Superman film and, I love Gal Gadot, you know, and I think all the elements are there. I want them to knock this out of the park. And so I'm going to be, you know, super hope it's trying to do a lot, which is scary because you mentioned not one origin stories. Guess what? There's Bruce Wayne flashbacks and origin stories in there, Brian. So
yeah, I saw that. That's literally the only part I wasn't crazy about.
And we have Alfred giving Bruce Wayne the, like, you shouldn't become Batman speech, which kind of gives you the sense that this is partly a Batman either origin or re-origin story.
Reboot. I mean, you know, if they speed it up, if just really, really quick see that he's an adventurous billionaire who suddenly, you know, gets has a cause and his cause is to stick it in the face of Superman and they don't like each other, but they have to team up for some kind of Lex Luthor thing that you know, gets rushed in the third act. I mean, that's fine. I'm okay. Okay.
I don't know whether or not this movie will be good. I don't know whether or not this movie will be bad. Here's what I do know. This movie will be long. This movie will be Lord of the Rings long. And then, you know, if just to look at everything that's in there, because we don't even get whatever, you know, time we're going to spend with Jason Momoa as Aquaman, who's in the movie.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. You know, I just get the sense that this is going to be 3+. This is going to be a heavy movie.
I mean, and what I'm, you know, what has me hopeful about it is that, like, you know, I loved 300, you know, I love Zack Snyder's 300. I loved Dawn of the Dead. I thought it was a really, really, really fun film. And I think that he's done some stuff that I just absolutely, totally, totally enjoyed and dug the hell out of. Right now, as far as the latest listed screenwriter on this is Chris Terrio, who did Argo, which I thought was a wonderfully well-written script. So the idea of Snyder focusing on directing and then having a really capable screenwriter writing an out-of-the-park screenplay for it, I think could be great. You know, I think has all the potential for, you know, doing great stuff. And Ben Affleck of late has been doing great. And now we're hearing that Ben Affleck may write and star in his own Batman movie, which, you know, is awesome. So I want it to be awesome. So
yeah, and I'm proud to remind
the
everyone
American.
That I'm proud to remind everyone that I've been pro Ben Affleck as Batman since day one. I think he's a really good match and an excellent actor.
I don't think anybody here was negative on that, right?
Yeah, no, I you know, I had people who, you know, were pro on the movie, be like, oh, but Ben Affleck. Listen, I mean, like, I think Ben Affleck's a great choice for that because he's, you know, follow his career and his acting chops, and he's knocks it out of the park, I think. So,
what do we think about Lex Luthor?
I think Eisenberg can pull it off. I think an understated, you know, I don't know. I thought he was suitably menacing in there in a way. You know, I mean, how have we seen Lex Luthor represented before? I actually kind of hated Kevin Spacey's Lex Luthor.
I think that Lex Luthor is, we have yet to see a great Lex Luthor. I mean, I think, agree. Like,
I mean, Gene Hackman in its, in, you know, for its time, that movie was,
yeah.
It was silly and over the top-ish and quirky. And, it, you know, even his villainous scheme was ridiculous, you know, buying the real estate to blow up, you know, half of, California for the real estate money.
Yeah, it was a very weird, you know, Lex Luthor in Superman Returns, where you're kind of like, he's like kind of like a less accomplished Donald Trump. Lex Luthor is tricky, and particularly, I thought Michael Rosenbaum's Lex Luthor in Smallville was really one of the bright shining parts.
I've heard that. I didn't dive all the way in on that. And by the way, in the chat, they're pointing out that he could get away with just doing Zuckerberg again. That's exactly what I thought. I was like that. You know, semi, you know, on the autistic spectrum, you know.
Yeah, but we're not getting that here. I mean, like, at least in the sneak peek, you know, that we see, it's charming Eisenberg.
Yeah,
you know, it's
I don't
quippy
know how
Eisenberg.
Charmed I am. I mean, I think there's a loathsome quality to him where he kind of holds all of humanity in contempt, similar to the way Mark Zuckerberg was portrayed, you know, as you know, feeling superior to everyone that he does has business dealing with.
My concern is this, is that Lex Luthor is a great foil for Superman because Lex Luthor is this conniving, play it, do it under the table, get you when you're not looking, sneaky kind of guy. Lex Luthor is a foil for Bruce Wayne. They've done very few matchups in comics between the two of them because, you know, Lex Luthor in his most best form when he's this powerful industrialist that has everybody kind of fooled.
He's kind of filling the same role as Bruce Wayne, right?
Yeah, and it's like you would think that, like, well, Bruce Wayne, the first, you know, you look at, you watch, you know, The Dark Knight, and Bruce Wayne's in a business deal with somebody, and the first thing he does is he's going behind the scenes to find out the source of mob money and all this sort of stuff. And so Bruce Wayne wouldn't be fooled and can play dirty, where Superman can't play dirty. So the idea that we get, quote Zuckerberg basically manipulating, you know, Bruce Wayne and this sort of stuff is sort of to be like, that's okay. I want to see this, but like, yeah, that's it's never played terribly well in the comics. There's been some interesting comics where, like, you know, you get the super smart, slightly older Lex Luthor and a younger Bruce Wayne, and Lex Luthor knows Bruce Wayne's kind of a mentor. Hobby is,
I mean, there have been two villain performances that I've seen recently that kind of, to me, sort of shape the promise of what an amazing Lex Luthor could be. Now, I'm not saying that they would, that the actors would do it, but just the ideas and the themes of power and responsibility clashing with, you know, sociopathic tendencies. And that is what we saw with Oscar Isaac in Ex Machina that we just finished. I think, you know, Oscar Isaac, to me, that dude could play the Lex Luthor that runs for president, that, you know, that is the actual, the big rallying figure, you know, against the illegal immigrant Superman, and is charming enough that my mom would be like, yeah, you know, he's got some good points. I think, you know, what we saw in the Daredevil, series with, you know, Wilson Fisk as, the Kingpin is just like, that's just a new,
so good,
just a new level for, like, okay, wow, this is what this guy looks like. And he feels real, and he feels dangerous, and he feels, unpredictable. And he sometimes isn't always, you know, the guy who's like, ah, well, you've fallen into my 15-step plan, good right. guy. Like, no, he's vulnerable. And sometimes he, you know, he's got to keep his stuff together. Like, I think that there's such a great nuance where we are right now in terms of this kind of genre and writing, that I worry in just what we've seen that it's just going to be Eisenberg as, hey, he's a smart guy and he's obsessed with Superman and he's going to go after him, and that's just going to be it. And also, considering the 17,000 other characters they have in this movie, I don't know if you can have them be much more than that.
Yeah, we in our long discussions about, like, where do you go with Lex Luthor, you know, the public facing, you know, the old Lex Luthor was the, you know, the secret criminal mastermind when the stories were much smaller was one thing, robbing banks and stuff like that. But as you move into it, you know, you want, somebody pointed out in the chat room, you know, Frank Underwood is, you know, Lex Luthor. That's the subversion of, we wanted to see Spacey play and not this guy trying to get old women to sign over their land deals. Like, this is Superman's foil.
Right.
In this, you know, as Justin pointed out, you know, that when it's the Lex Luthor that you're persuaded by and you like and you're charmed by, where here we get the really evil Zuckerberg, you know, the one that you don't like and you don't this, and he's plotting in front of a friggin' fireplace, you know, mustache twirling, waiting to lose his hair from being exposure to kryptonite, I'm sure. You can't handle that stuff.
Yeah. You think he's gonna lose his hair? Man, that'd be crazy. It'd be crazy if he lost his hair in the middle of the movie. That'd be nuts.
Yeah, so, you know, listen, you can't mess around with Kryptonian technologies, not expect repercussions. But that, I mean, again, I want to see this. I want this to be great. I want this to be great. I just have that, like, yeah, in the comics, when Lex Luthor's weaselly, he's less persuasive. When he's that person that you're like,
you want that, you know, the anti-hero
Javier
seduction.
Bardem in Skyfall.
But,
you
know. I mean, I agree with, you know, the problem that Justin says. I mean, if it gets too dense, I mean, here's the thing. If it's the Avengers, then it wins. If it's Avengers Age of Ultron, it loses. Like, they just packed too much into Ultron, and I just didn't feel that ride the way I felt on the first one.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think it's going to need to be fun, which I think is something that it will have to improve on Man of Steel. You know, it's going to have to be a more fun movie than Man of Steel was, because it was... You know, Man of Steel was, you know, even I walked out of it liking it, but I have a hard time looking back on it and saying, oh, remember all those fun moments of Man of Steel? You know,
we've talked about that, but I mean, I would put actually Man of Steel in, I don't know, as far as maybe third place Superman movie, possibly second place Superman movie of all time. I mean, the first one is.
Yeah, all right. I'm with you. I think it's the third best Superman movie.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Is that? I thought you were going to say like, much? Superhero movie.
No.
Quest for Peace had its moments. You know, John Cryer.
No, Richard Pryor, right?
No, John Cryer in Quest for Peace.
Oh, John Cryer. Sorry.
You know, back to a moment like this. Imagine if you had Javier Bardem as Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
You know, where he's making the case and you're like, yeah, you know, this man is charming. You know, I just hope he doesn't flip out a coin, you know, and call me friendo. But, you know, that's the thing I always wanted to see was just the guy that you could have make his case without you going, well, he's a sinister villain. Come on, guys. Don't seduce us. Make us fall for it. Because if I'm watching people on screen fall for him and I don't, then it's not believable.
Well, and that's really how he plays against Superman, right? Is that Superman, for all of his powers, and they are infinite and godlike, he does not have guile. You know, he relies on his moral compass, and that will see him through. And that is his redeeming quality, is that he will be the big blue Boy Scout when maybe we make shortcuts and, you know, we have unintended consequences. Whereas Lex Luthor is the opposite. He sees every piece on the board, and he is Varys or Littlefinger from Game of Thrones, except he has designs and money and power enough to be king. And right. And that's his motivation, and that's where he has it over Superman. You know, he's got the compunction to be like, yeah, listen, I just know, yeah, you're a big powerful element of this chessboard, and I know how to box you in, and I will. And I will make you make decisions, and I'll make you doubt yourself, and I will make everybody else understand my point of view. But yeah, I mean, trailer looks great. Trailer looks amazing. You know, it certainly seems like a reaction to some of the criticism to Man of Steel, making sure that you put the Battle of Metropolis right up front and demonstrate that is part of the central element of his disagreement with Bruce Wayne. So.
I'm going to be rooting for this thing to succeed. Yeah, absolutely going to be rooting for it. Placing Metropolis next to Gotham.
Yeah, do we want to get full organic web shooters and get fanboy rage about the fact that apparently a Metropolis and...
Yeah, that doesn't bother me at all. I mean, it's like, you know, once... that's one of the benefits you get of having made up city names is you could put it, you know, Springfield could be in any state in the Union. It doesn't matter.
Andrew, it doesn't matter. He's saying that your thought on this doesn't matter. How do you, your rebuttal?
Listen, I'm excited to see where the writers go with this, to see what they've done with this. I hope it's one of these things where when I saw I went and saw Terminator Genesis in the theaters because, you know, James Cameron really liked it, and I love that franchise. There are times where so much of what I thought were done just because the writers said, well, we'll do this just because it makes it easier for us to get there, not because it serves the story, but more because it serves the way we put ourselves into this corner, mm-hmm. You know? And that's cause I always like, you know, you always go like, where's Gotham? Where's Metropolis? And, you know, Metropolis was always going to be like Chicago or New York City, you know, where Gotham was always going to be kind of like a Detroit or a Pittsburgh or that kind of place. You know, the idea that they're twin cities is this. And again, I can't, in movies, you get to do whatever you want. You get to do whatever you want when you do that thing. But then it's this, well, you know, then Superman's kind of the hero of, you know, if it's just across the river, you know, I'd see like Superman's probably going to go answer some fires and stuff in Gotham. You know, if he hears people crying for help there, it's not like, sorry, guys, I don't cross the line.
So yeah, the Snyder, for those of you who didn't see, said that in that this was probably the biggest comic rule that they broke, which was putting Metropolis next to Gotham in a San Francisco Oakland type of scenario. Which, as a resident of Oakland, I mean, we would obviously be the Gotham. So
yeah,
I mean,
sure.
That's pretty rad. Yeah, that man's cooler
Bruce
than
Wayne
Superman.
Would live in San Francisco. You know?
That's a good point.
That's true.
You know, when he goes to all the society parties, if you're a Batman villain, are you going to be crashing, you know, the Oakland, you know, museum opening or the San Francisco? That's where I'm kind of going like, well, this is going to be kind of an interesting choice.
Well, you know, we shall see.
And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I mean, I don't. I'm just picking. I want this. I'm
still upset about organic web shooters, for the record.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, dude. No, it didn't bother me at all.
That's fine.
The reason it bothered me.
Look at you, Captain. It doesn't bother me. Make Gotham right in the middle of Metropolis. It's fine. Doesn't bother me. Oh.
Let me address the organic web shooters, though. Just one moment. My issue with that had more to do with the rationale was because Raimi didn't want to make Peter Parker a geek. He didn't want to make him a sciencey guy. He thought that he didn't like that part about him, and he wanted to take that away. As a sciencey kid who loves science, to see them say, no, we're going to downplay that and all that. I'm like, oh, that's what makes him cool is he's this nerdy bookworm guy that really could maybe build those things. And then they take that away. It's like, that was one of my favorite traits about Parker.
Yeah.
Well,
if you hate science, Brian, that's fine.
At the time, I remember thinking like I liked the fact that it cut 15 minutes of what you would need to add. You know, it's like he get bitten by the spider and he becomes Spider-Man. And it's like that just
Brian
seemed like a faster way to get there.
Bullet points, folks, just so you understand. Bullet points. If you can cut those parts out that he already knows.
To be honest, yeah. I was like, yeah, no, good. We got to the part where he's swinging, and it's only 30 minutes into the movie. I'm so happy. Like that to me.
It would be really great for you if you had, if they gave fast passes.
Yes.
Like, it's like, oh, no.
Get to the point of the movie.
Yeah, I've read it. Yeah, so this is just so Aunt May and then Uncle Ben get shot. Okay, yeah. I'll just take the fast pass. Just let me know 20 minutes into the movie. When I'm going to show up.
There are some, like, I loved Godzilla in the theater, but I went to go watch it again, and, like, man, that hour before we get to Godzilla was like,
oh, geez. I thought,
come on, let them fight already.
Yeah.
Man, remember that one guy who wrote King of the Monsters on the 24-hour news scroll at the end of Godzilla? He got fired?
Oh, dude, that guy. I loved it.
King of the Monsters.
Fox
News Alert. King of the Monsters. Godzilla.
This just in, Godzilla's freaking awesome.
Oh, by the way, did you see the casting of Aunt May in the new Spider-Man as yet untitled, still in pre-production?
Oh, it's not, what's her name?
My biological clock is ticking like this.
Marissa Tomei.
What?
I'm so confused.
Dude, she was so bangable in The Wrestler.
She doesn't age.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, dude. I mean, I feel like this is the reaction that all of nerddom had. All of male and certain female nerddom was just like, I don't know how I should process the idea that Aunt May is.
Remember, it's she's not even a MILF. She's an elf.
All right. So there we go. That's our Comic-Con
good
review.
Chat.
We did not. Oh, sorry, Andrew. You saw the Suicide Squad leak trailer. Suicide Squad thoughts?
I'm curious to see the actual one. There are a lot of let's wait for the real trailer. You know.
People are very hot on Margot Robbie's Harlequin.
Yeah. She looks amazing. She's a special effect in herself.
What did you guys think of like the random fanboy hate for Jared Leto's Joker? Jared Leto has really impressed me in everything he's done.
I think he was a great choice for that.
I think most of the rage was not so much at Jared Leto, but just the implementation of the Joker look, you know, with him. You know, tattooing, what is it, Disturbed or something across his forehead? Or...
Yeah, we also, by the way, get in the Batman Superman trailer, the costume of Robin with ha 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 jokes on you spray painted on it, which we can only assume is from the Joker. So
yeah,
it's another element of that movie. Again, 3+ hours. In fact, I'm going to set the over under at 3 hours and 10 minutes, and
whoa,
I'm betting the over.
You know what? If I believe it would have been possible to have the Avengers be as good as the Avengers is without any of the lead up movies of everyone having their own flick going into it. And this will be the test to see. I mean, this could be the one. Who knows?
I mean, but like, do you think it will be less than 3 hours?
I think it will kiss 310. I would take that bet. I believe it'll
you
be
would go
under
310.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But not by much. It would be a near thing. I think that's pretty good odds making you're doing.
I don't think we're hitting 3 hours because you look at the trend. Avatar was 2 hours and 40 minutes. Let's pull up like what were the, you know,
did Man of Steel? Man of Steel was,
it's like 240, I think.
Was it?
Yeah.
Transformers Dark of the Moon, 230. Let's see.
Runtime.
You know, Man of Steel, like, yeah, and it was longest because when your dad dies three times,
yeah,
you know, have to,
dude.
Yeah, you gotta milk
loved it. Loved it each time he died.
All right, so maybe not three. So about 2 hours 45? I could see it going to over 2 hours 45.
Yeah. I agree.
I mean, the litmus test would be you look at the top 10 moneymakers there and you say, okay, like how long was Dark Knight? Dark Knight was 2 hours and 30 minutes, and that felt long. Dark Knight Rises, 2 hours 45 minutes. So Warner Brothers is probably gonna put a cap on, you know, hey, listen. The Hobbit movies got progressively shorter. The Five Armies ended up being 2 hours and 24 minutes when the first one was 2 hours and 46. So that was 20 minutes shorter. Yeah, they kept getting shorter and shorter. And
I'm going to say this one pushes 245.
I believe it. And I think probably it should. I think that
should
if, I mean, look, I think there are a number of good movies that are 2 hours, 45 minutes long.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of those movies.
Why can't this be one of them?
I don't know. I mean, maybe it's a Batman Superman movie. Like, maybe, you know, there's plenty of time. Why do we gotta rush? I guess that's all I'm saying. Why do we have to? Why does everything have to be in the? How about we have a nice movie? It's Lex Luthor. He's manipulating them. They, you know, we see. I like Jesse Eisenberg's. You know, like Black versus Blue, God versus Man. I think that sets up some of that mythology. I like that. I don't know if I need a Batman origin story and a Why Robin Died story and a tease to the Joker and a tease to Aquaman and a tease, and, you know, a 15-minute action set piece with Wonder Woman and aside.
Relationship
with Lois Lane, the development of Clark Kent as a reporter at the Daily Planet, a side jag where Lex Luthor goes to find Zod's corpse and develops Kryptonian technology. Like, it's just
all of this sounds awesome to me.
My point isn't that it's
and
not
I wouldn't want
awesome.
It to be rushed.
My point isn't that it's not awesome. My point is that it's a lot, and I love a lot of these ideas so much. I would like to see them breathe.
I mean, again, it's Avengers versus Avengers 2. Avengers 2 is what you were afraid of. They packed too much, and as a result, you didn't get enough out of anything. Yeah, and whereas Avengers was the right amount of breathing room, I felt like.
I guess, I mean, really, but I don't know.
I'm not as passionate about those movies as you are. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think Avengers. To me, again, I thought Avengers 2 was better than Avengers for me. But I think it's what I expect in that movie, you know, and the stuff that was in there, like, yeah, it was overstuffed, but I think there's only so much not overstuffed.
How long was the runtime on Avengers Age of Ultron?
The runtime on Avengers Age of Ultron was, gentlemen, I don't have it here.
221.
221, yeah.
And you know, I guess it was like, But at least those movies, I already have backstory on them, you know, like there's a lot that you can also remain unsaid. Whereas like, this is the first time, like, man, I would love, I mean, I'm excited to see what they do with Aquaman. I think Jason Momoa is a great casting for Aquaman. I think that there can be a really rad Aquaman movie. I wouldn't be as excited as an Aquaman movie as I would a fucking Submariner movie, which I think would be awesome because Submariner's
Dude,
a cooler
such
character.
An asshole. He's just the biggest jerk.
He's such a cooler character than, you know, the racist of the sea.
Yeah, that's exactly. privileged representation of a white upper class, you know, the richest of the rich, prince aristocracy.
But yeah, I don't know. I think there's just a lot of really, really cool stuff in there, and I just that's my worry. My worry is that it's like, all right, so we get it, and maybe we'll never get it again if this isn't a success, and we're just stapling so much stuff on there that it worries me a little bit.
Yeah, interesting.
Anyway,
I I equate it to like, you know, like, all right, imagine high school lunchroom years ago. We're all in the same lunchroom for some, because the T-800 was able to build us a time machine, even though the T-1000, whatever, couldn't. We'll get into that. You know, we've got our time machine, you know, with all the, you know, all the help Skynet could help for, but anyhow, he's able to do it that we couldn't. Anyhow, forget that. We're not there. Okay. We're at the high school lunchroom. I'm like, guys, how cool would it be to have a Superman versus Batman movie?
Awesome.
Right. Okay. Already are tumescent, engorged.
No, yeah. What's funny is I, again, those are two universes. If we're back in that time, Superman means a franchise I'm kind of worn out on. Batman means a crappy 1960s show that I'm sort of worn out on. And if you tell me that the two of them teaming up, I'm like, that sounds incredibly dumb and I'm not interested. And in fact, I kind of felt that way about this up until I started seeing these trailers, until I saw that it's more of the darkness from Man of Steel that I really enjoyed.
Okay, Brian, just for the sake of pretend that I'm like, oh, who's your favorite director back then?
And yeah, and just trying to paint a gigantic compliment for the franchise.
Okay, right on. Who is my favorite?
Let's say like James Cameron. Like, what if James Cameron was going to – remember when there was the talk of James Cameron doing Spider-Man?
Sure, yeah.
And we're like that because like I was burnt out on Tim Burton's Batman franchise 5 minutes into Batman, you know, when I'm like, he can't move, you know. Yeah. But where they're like, no, imagine like we had James Cameron or whatever doing Batman versus Superman, you know, Ridley Scott. We'd be like, all right. I'm like, yeah. And then we'll have Wonder Woman in it too. Like, yeah. And then we're going to have this. Yeah. And this. Yeah. And then I keep adding things to the table. You're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Slow down. Let's just have Batman versus Superman.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess also in my mind, this is, you know, Justice League, the movie, but they're with a different title.
Well, I mean, yeah. It's very plainly a prequel, you know, yeah. Dawn of Justice.
Like, oh yeah. Well, that's a good point.
It's all right there.
Yeah.
Wait a second.
By the way, breaking news, Nescom, Satoru Iwata, the CEO of Nintendo, apparently possibly dead.
Whoa.
Irresponsible rumor mongering brought to you on the After Things show.
There's a Kotaku article, seems to say.
Oh, and a Nintendo PDF.
Wow.
Yeah, notification of death and personnel change of a representative director.
Yeah, Kotaku says.
Oh, good lord. Do you think that this press release could get any more
clinical?
Coldly Japanese.
Nintendo Company Limited deeply regrets to announce that president has passed away.
Yeah, this
here,
is from-
here are his stats. Wow.
Holy smokes. Dude. Well, hey, listen, now that we're on a high note, do we have any other picks? Any after picks? Sub picks?
I don't know. I think all of these are
chick flicks.
Yeah, my pick is watch all of this Comic-Con stuff.
Yeah, I second that.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, that press release, by the way, is being apparently served off the Nintendo website, so.
Yeah.
Sad. Very sad.
It's been after life.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.